Roundtable on Crick Info Talk.
Hello and welcome to the Crick Info Roundtable. I'm Sanjay Mandrekar. Cricket is seeing troubled times. The Sydney Test, which should have been a well-crafted commercial for Test cricket, has transformed into a full-blown horror flick. It will now be remembered for shocking umpiring decisions, bad blood between teams, and most disturbingly, allegations of racial abuse. Which brings me to the point of discussion today, sledging, or mental disintegration, as Steve Waugh would like to call it. Some say sledging is as old as the game itself. Even the revered W.G. Grace is said to have sledged opposition. Some say the Australians invented it and then honed it into a fine art. But what is a sledge, and when does it transform into good old fashioned personal abuse? Where does one draw the line? To discuss this burning issue, I have with me former Australia captain Ian Chappell and Sri Lankan wicketkeeper batsman Kumar Sangakkara, two men who know a thing or two about the fine art of sledging. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Sanjay.
I'm sorry I had to call it the fine art of sledging, but let me just throw up an initial question to both of you. I'm going to ask you a simple question. What, in your opinion, is sledging, and how is sledging not personal abuse? Ian, if we can start with you, please.
Well, I don't recognize the term, Sanjay, because I was there when the term was coined, and it had nothing to do with what goes on the field. So, as far as I'm concerned, there's gamesmanship, which has always been around, and there's always a part in the game for that. Then there's abuse, and I think there's a third thing crept into the game, which I think has got out of control a bit in recent times, and that's just inane chatter. So, there's a part for gamesmanship, there's no part for abuse, and certainly, in my opinion, there's no part for inane chatter.
Yeah, because this morning I tried to look up dictionary meaning of sledging, and it had something to do with a old board on a snow that, you know, we use as a sledge. But Kumar, tell us, you know, when, as Ian said, you know, I mean, sledging is a term that he doesn't recognize. But are you for gamesmanship, and where does one draw the line, and how does one interpret, you know, personal abuse from gamesmanship, considering, you know, the culture angle, well, different languages? Kumar?
Well, I think Ian is spot on. There are differences, and sledging, of course, is a term that was coined by the media, I think. There's always some sort of banter going on in the middle, and some of it can be very interesting, and it adds to the heightening of the competitiveness out on the field. But then again, you get people who stand in the slips, or sometimes even wicketkeepers, who just keep going on and on and on, and even as bowlers are running up, they're still talking. And most of the time, it's just nothing. It's not directed at the opposition. It's just, you know, just chatter. And that, after a while, even to your own team, can get a bit annoying. I think where you draw the line is when you drag your color, your race, or your country into it, your family into it. You know, things that, like, of that nature has happened, and I think that's when you draw the line and say, you know, that is personal abuse, and that has no place in the game. And also, I think players have to be very honest with themselves that if they do engage in gamesmanship and banter, it has always got to be something that you can leave on the field, and that you don't go running around complaining to the media or the match referees, because, you know, if it's gamesmanship, you can always leave that on the field, because it's directed to get a reaction that is advantageous to you, but in a way that is not abuse. And I think that's where you draw the line.
Ian, let me ask you this. Now, we have sort of this talk or chatter on the field, we have put them into three categories: gamesmanship, and then there is personal abuse, and there is the inane chatter that you just mentioned. Are the officials, the umpires on the field, capable of categorizing all the talk that happens on the field? Are they competent enough? Do they have the ability to put these, you know, the chatter into these three columns and then act accordingly?
There's two things, Sanjay. Firstly, the officials, the ICC, whoever it is that supposedly runs the game, has diluted the decision-making process on the field of the umpires. And in doing that, they've diluted the authority of the umpires on the field. They've also put layers of officialdom between the umpires on the field and the players. You know, you've got referees, the CEO of the ICC can sight a player from thousands of miles away. Now you've got this stupidity of captains being asked to dob in the opposition for racial slurs. It's ridiculous. So I think once you start diluting the decision-making process of the umpires, then you get a bunch of umpires who really don't want to make decisions, happier referring decisions or somebody else taking it out of their hands. So if you're going to breed umpires like that, then no, they haven't got the capabilities of running the game on the field. But I think the sooner we get back to the two umpires running the game on the field, I think the game will be a lot better. And as far as the inane chatter is concerned, you know, I've been contending for at least a decade that the more that you allow to be said on the cricket field, the more likelihood someone will get personal. And if you get personal at the wrong time, then trouble erupts. And, you know, the trouble erupted at the SCG. I think I wrote 10 years ago that it'll end up in fisticuffs. It hasn't yet. But it will, and if the officials don't understand how important it is to cut down on the inane chatter that goes on the field, then they're going to keep having problems. And the other thing that absolutely staggers me is that batsmen don't take the law into their own hands. If the umpires won't stop it, if I'm a batsman out there in the middle and all that rubbish is being spoken, I'm not going to put up with it. I'm going to put an end to it myself if the umpires won't.
Kumar, you've been around for a while, playing at the highest level. You've played against the toughest oppositions all over the world. Do you see this increasing in the last few years, or you see that there's just a little more attention given by the media because they love to highlight such matters more than, you know, what happens with the bat and ball, because that makes for more spice sometimes. So yeah. Do you think it has increased, or the media attention on it has increased?
I think more than the players getting more involved in it, I think the media hype has increased. But it's strange for me, because when I came into the side, it was all about Australia saying this, saying that, and being so aggressive verbally on the field. I think in the past 4 years, we've played quite a few series against them, and we've never had any incident of that sort. There has been a few words said, but there's been nothing that was personally abusive or anything of the kind. It was just a lot of tough, hard cricket being played. We've had, as I always say, one really bad test series in South Africa, I think, in 2002. Mm-hmm. And after that, even that has quietened down. I think Ian is right. You've got to have people who are closest to the action, especially the umpires, making the decisions as to how and when these things are dealt with. If you have a CEO who's not even in the country or not even in the ground trying to call in and say, well, I saw this, that's never going to work. And even a match referee is, I think, quite far removed from where the action is. And I think the two guys who are in charge are the umpires, and they should be allowed to handle it as they see fit. If there is gamesmanship, engage in it, leave it on the field. If you give it out, you should be able to take it. There are no two words about it, but if the players are not going to stand for it, I don't think we'll have this many problems. But as I said, there are going to be things said. And if everyone is going to look at the umpires and everyone else to solve it, and then they don't have the right process, or they're not supported enough by the powers that be, then it's just going to turn out into a huge controversy and sometimes a joke. So I think when it comes to that, if the players are the ones who are going to complain, then they should really start thinking about what is being said out there by themselves.
Ian, I'm going to just pick out something that Kumar said, which I thought was very striking, is that Sri Lanka never had those kind of problems with Australia that India seemed to have off late. So two questions to you, Ian. One is Australia playing differently against India, or is it the excessive attention that India gets as a cricket team when it plays opposition that is getting, you know, these kind of issues going out of proportion?
Well, I mean, I'm not in India to judge what's being said back there.
No, I'll tell you, lots being said. I mean, we are making national headlines here with every word that's come out of the mouth of the players has become national headlines. So political matters have taken a backseat. So in a nutshell, that is the situation here. You know, there are so many Indian fans watching. You know, so there is that extra needle that, you know, Kumar Sangakkara didn't quite see in Sri Lanka-Australia matches. So does that get Australia a little more fired up when they're playing India?
Well, I don't know. You'd have to ask the Australian players. I don't think it's all that important what the media believe. I mean, in the end, it's cricket that's got to sort out the problem, if they believe there is a problem there, it's cricket that's got to sort it out. I read a wonderful quote just today, actually. It was by an Indian journalist, and I thought it was a wonderful quote. It said that the BCCI runs the ICC, and the media runs the BCCI.
That was said by Suresh Menon. I thought that was a wonderful piece that he wrote, Suresh Menon, from Bangalore.
Yeah. In the end, the cricket administration throughout the world pretty well is terrible. And I mean, the fish stinks from the head. The ICC has never been a good body at running cricket. And I think it's deteriorated terribly in probably the last decade. And until you get a decent, strong administration, I mean, I wrote somewhere just the other day that if you've got an administration that is strong but fair, if you've got umpires who are competent and, you know, run the game with authority, and you've got captains who set the example, then, you know, cricket will be, I mean, you'll always have some problems, because what people need to remember is that cricketers just happen to be human beings. Let cricket sort the thing out. The media is not going to sort it out at all. The media, you know, will love to jump on the bandwagon of any sort of controversy. So cricket's got to sort this problem out. But until cricket is run properly, there's no chance it'll be sorted out.
Kumar, one of the things that both of you are in agreement with is the umpires on the field have to sort it out. Now, there was, of course, a time when, you know, the administrators felt that the umpires weren't good enough in tackling the situation, so matters were almost taken out of their hands. Everything was stipulated in that blue book of the ICC as to what has to be done when this happens. Do you think there are enough competent umpires out there, along with getting, you know, the cricketing decisions right? I mean, the leg befores and everything else with it, getting it right. And at the same time, being able to monitor players' behavior and able to distinguish racial abuse from personal abuse and personal abuse from gamesmanship. Do you think we can find such people?
I'm sure you can. You look hard enough, even the existing umpires. I think there's a lot of doubt in umpires' minds as to what will happen to them if they take a strong decision out on the field. They are being second-guessed by TV. They're being questioned by the players. They're being questioned by the match referee, the ICC. They go through a whole process. I think it's always good to, you know, keep them on their toes and say you've got to be as professional as the players are, and you have to be as correct as often as is humanly possible. But at the same time, I think they have to go out there with the confidence, knowing that they have an authority that backs them 100% and that they earn the players' trust. I think that is the key thing. And sometimes with such high stakes, a couple of decisions here and there, you're never going to get, you know, perfect umpires that don't make any mistakes. But it depends, you know, how the players take it and then how the media takes it and how their reaction actually influences the governing bodies. I think what we have to understand is that the media will always, always hype things up. They are there to do that. The players have to accept the fact that they are going to be scrutinized. There will be criticism. Some outrageous writing, some will be very good constructive criticism, in-depth pieces. Everything will be done by the media. Mm. The governing bodies have to realize that the media is out there to do that. But do we really have to make change because someone just writes about it and asks for it and criticizes it? I don't think so. I think we've got to do the right thing at the right time. And sometimes if it displeases the media, well, so be it. But as long as the players, the officials, and the game is safeguarded, that's what you have to do. And the authorities in power have to make sure that that happens. You cannot be pleasing, one section just because, you know, they have more outlets for voicing their opinions. You have to make sure that the players and the game and then the officials who oversee everything have the authority to go out and do what they're best at.
Because I'm a bit older than you two, I was around basically when the problems started to occur between officials and umpires. And what happened was that there was plenty of teeth in the laws for the umpires to do their job on the field. Unfortunately, the administrators didn't have the guts to back the umpires when they tried to do things. And eventually the umpires, I'm sure, just threw their hands in the air and said, well, if we're not going to be back, we're not going to take these strong stands. And because of the weakness of the officials, they then thought, oh, well, we'll solve this problem by bringing in referees and all these other sheriffs. And in fact, what they've actually done is made the problem worse. So, you know, I think most of the animosity and the anger that occurs on a cricket field is caused by poor officialdom, whether it be poor laws, you know, poor administration, or, you know, bad decision making. But in the original place, if the officials, if the administrators had backed the umpires on the field to the hilt, wouldn't have even needed referees.
Well, Ian, I completely agree with you that there are some, you know, officials out there, and even Kumar mentioned it. Well, the moderator who is moderating this discussion was sent off the field once by a very competent umpire in a first-class match. You know, so there are umpires out there who are tough and take the right decision. And I'm not complaining about, you know, what that gentleman did when he sent me off the field. I deserved it. There's another little angle in what's happened in Sydney. Is the cultural differences, and where, you know, a certain term is a friendly banter, gamesmanship in one country could be racially abusive in the other country. So, Kumar, how does the official, if the, you know, authority is now solely with the umpire, how do they differentiate between the two?
Well, I think that's quite difficult to say, well, this is exactly this. I always believe racism has a lot to do with how things are said. Just identifying a person to be black or white is not usually racism. It is the way in which it is said, and also what the words that follow that term. But, you know, you are right. There are some instances when people have been misunderstood. We had an instance with one of our fast bowlers, Richard Pereira, who was bowling at Craig White in Coronagoa. I think I mentioned this before. And he was hit for a couple of fours, and he said, "Bloody white, I'm going to kill you." And he was hauled up before the match referee, and his explanation was, I'm sorry, I don't know why I'm here, because I called him by his name. So, you know, Craig White. So, you know, sometimes you do get misunderstandings, and you get instances where, you know, players sometimes say things and which are construed to mean various different things by various people. But I think that is where, you know, you deal with it on the field. You don't take all of this out of the field. I'm yet to see, there have been instances when, I think Darren Lehman was called up for making a racial comment when he was playing against us, when he was off the field. But, you know, if you can deal with it on the field, leave it on the field, and then that's when the umpires and the players will have a lot more control of what goes on.
Right.
If it is something that is so terrible that it cannot be dealt with on the field and it deserves to go to the match referee and then to be dealt with by the ICC, yes, do it. But don't dilute the powers of the umpires on the field. And also, I think the players should have enough self-respect and respect for each other to be able to deal with things either on the field or over a drink off the field. And I think if you trust the players a lot more and the umpires a lot more, you get less of these misunderstandings, and I think the game will go on more efficiently, and everyone will be a lot freer in their mind as to where they stand. So
right.
I think players have a great responsibility in doing that.
Ian, just one question to you. I mean, you know, there's so much being said about, you know, every statement that is made by the player on the field, anything offhand remark is reported, makes headlines. In the 70s, you know, when you played tough cricket too. What's changed in the 70s in the way players have behaved on the field and here now as we are in 2007?
Well, I mean, I would say that, you know, what was said on the field in the 70s, there was a bit that was humorous. There was some of it that was classed as abusive. You know, fast bowlers telling batsmen they're going to knock their so-and-so block off. There was a bit of that, but I think most batsmen just either laughed it off or they responded to it in their own way. But it wasn't somebody setting out to either degrade the opposition or to work on the opposition with a verbal attack. The teams that I captained were accused of starting it. In fact, basically, they accused me of starting it. One of my responses to that is, well, you know, with an attack of Lily Thompson, Walker, Mallett and Gilmore, I didn't feel like I had to talk blokes out. But I think two things bother me. You know, when Steve Waugh starts talking about mental disintegration, you know, I just say that is total rubbish. That is not part of the game. And unfortunately now, every time it is discussed, you know, every time somebody asks the player, well, what about the chat on the field, the player seems to say, well, it's part of the game. And my answer to that is, codswallop, it's not part of the game. A batsman does not have to put up with that rubbish on the field. That's why I said earlier on that I'm staggered that more batsmen don't try and put an end to it themselves. If the umpires aren't going to help them, then you put an end to it yourself. So I would say, you know, there were certainly things said on the field, but it wasn't, you know, certainly wasn't constant. And it was never ever done. I mean, in my own case, a lot of what I said on the field was because an opposition player had annoyed me doing something, i.e. turning around and looking at us when we appealed, which used to annoy the hell out of me. And I always used to tell them the same thing. You get on with your batting, you leave the appealing to us, and leave the umpiring to the umpire, and we'll all be a lot happier. Now, you know, if I speak three sentences, there would have been a bit of swearing in there, but it wasn't done because I was trying to unsettle the batsman. It was done because, you know, I always believed that the fielding side was entitled to appeal. So, you know, if a lot of people thought I was doing that to unsettle them, well, they were wrong.
I have a theory, gentlemen, and it's something to do with television, because I've been involved for the last 10 years. If some players have realized, you know, that if they behaved in a certain manner, or if they said something, if they glared at the opposition, they would get a lot of attention via the television cameras. You know, obviously this is a cricketer who perhaps doesn't get enough wickets or runs to get the attention. So he realizes that if I behave in a certain fashion, which is slightly over the top, I tend to get a lot of attention. Do you think that is also one of the reasons why we see so much of aggression, some players feeling that, you know, I've been watched very closely by the public. If some opposition player has given it to me, I've got to give it back to show the public back home that I'm not one to take it lying down.
Well, I think players can't have it both ways. Players tend to complain about the media when they start criticizing things, but they also use the media for career advancements, endorsements, and things like that. So you have to learn how to live with the media. And I think, Sanjay, you are right. There are some people who tend to think that playing cricket, that one part of playing cricket is being aggressive verbally and having excessive gestures and body language on the field. And sometimes people think that's the way to go. And I think Australia has created a scenario where people going to Australia come with a preconceived idea that you have to be verbally aggressive, you have to, you know, glare and mumble and shout and get involved in sledging when they go to Australia, because that's how you beat Australia. And I think all of that will work in Australia's favour when players come with their minds and things other than playing cricket, other than batting, bowling and fielding. I think for years it's worked in Australia's favour that the teams go out there and they actually sit down and plan for things other than playing cricket.
Ian, you want to add on to that?
Well, all I'd say is if that's the way they plan to play against Australia, they're stupid. I think I've mentioned before that the first-class game in Australia is played very competitively, and, you know, there's a bit said on the field in a lot of cases because you've got guys who play together in the Australian side and they know each other's foibles and they'll get mentioned on the field. But the Australians are used to playing in that atmosphere. You know, I said before the start of the Indian tour here that if India came to Australia and started to try and challenge Australia by playing that way, they would be falling into a trap. India have got to outsmart Australia, not try and beat Australia at Australia's own games.
Kumar, you know, I have noticed with you, I mean, you have been giving it back to certain oppositions on certain days, but against most other teams, you're quite happy to be behind the stumps or, you know, with your bat in your hand, scoring double hundreds. It seems like you've sort of, you have control over the way you've behaved, you know, especially against India. I mean, you've been very quiet and hardly noticeable on the field. But I remember a few matches against South Africa where you got a lot of attention for the way you conducted yourself on the field. So was that deliberately changed behavior against certain opposition on certain days?
Not really, Sanjay. My approach to pledging is if something is said to me, I reply, and that's it. It's done. I don't have to worry about, you know, anything happening out of the field, even though it has happened sometimes off the field where certain things have been taken a bit too far. But keep it simple. Don't worry about anything else. Someone says something, you settle it immediately and then move on, rather than have it run the length of an entire series.
Ricky Ponting has got a lot of criticism for the way he handled his team. Do you think the captain should be held ultimately responsible for the behavior of his team, Ian?
The captain, and it's in the laws of cricket, has got to control his team. And I think Ponting is quite well aware of that. And Ponting has a history of when he's made mistakes himself personally, or his team has, he's faced up to them. So I've got no doubt that he will do the same after what's happened in Sydney. But to ask him or any other captain to worry about what the opposition is doing and saying is an absolute nonsense. And that is a recipe for disaster. And I'm not surprised that it's, you know, that it's helped create what's happened since the Sydney test.
Finally, gentlemen, what is the way forward? I mean, how do we tackle this? We are all in agreement the umpires need to play or they should be given more responsibility to handle such matters. But do you see perhaps the administrators now getting one more line in the blue book saying that no chatter will be allowed? Or do you think something like that would happen or better sense would prevail? Kumar?
The game will be poorer if they do that. I think it'll be a lot more boring to go out there and play cricket. But I think what you can do is empower the umpires to deal with everything on the field so that, you know, you don't have spillover from what happens on the field to the media and to the ICC. If the media asks a question, you should be able to give a straight answer. Yes, we have dealt with it on the field and that's the end of the matter. And I think the players and the captains also have a responsibility in the sense that you can't control what the opposition tells you. But of course, you can ask your team to make sure that whatever he said is not racially or in any other way personally abusive to your opponent. I think that's not too much to ask of your players. And I'm sure the players themselves will respond very positively to such a request from their own team. And I think that is the way forward. Empower the umpires, back them up, and then trust the players and ask them to be the examples that they are supposed to be. Play the game hard. Have words said in the middle, you know, that'll never go away from cricket or any other sport, I'd say. But make sure there is nothing said that cannot be dealt with on the field by the on-field officials and the players and captains themselves.
Ian, final thoughts from you, please.
I think the problem could be sorted out fairly easily, but like all the problems in cricket at the moment, there's no way in the wide world it's going to get sorted out while you've got the ICC set up the way it is. The ICC has never worked. It didn't work back when I was playing, but they got away with it because there were a lot less teams. Now, their incompetence is shown to the world almost every other day, and in the last few months we've seen it numerous times. I just have absolutely no faith that this administration will get it right. Till the ICC is restructured and becomes a body that administers in the best interest of the game of cricket, you know, a lot of these problems will continue to happen.
Well, I think that gives us a subject for discussion in our next cricket roundtable, how ICC can be a body that Ian Chappell learns to respect. I think that could be a good subject of discussion. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us on the Cricket Info Roundtable. Thank you very much.
This is Cricket Info Talk.